Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support. Welcome everyone to another lovely episode of Brainstorm Brewery. This is episode number 96. This is Marcel. I'm here with my co-hosts, Ryan, Jason, and Corbin. And first off, we're going to read the winners and losers from MTG Stocks for the week. And it is, no, we're not going to ever do that again.
I thought it was pretty obviously satire, but some people were like, I really like the new format.
Yeah.
I know. Some people are like, please don't let that happen. Don't do that.
Some people really liked it. Sorry. Sorry if you liked it. We're not going to do it again. Yes. That wasn't a podcast.
I had an epiphany, though, while I was editing it. I was like, you know what? This might work. And then I listened to it a few times. I was like, there's no way we'd be able to do this deadpan without cracking up every time we did it. So, yeah.
No, that took us like 20 takes.
Record last time.
It was so bad. We made Elliot wait. We're like, no, just bear with us like 5 minutes. We just got to record a 5 minute cast and it'll take 5 minutes because we're dumb and naive. And we're like, yeah, we can get this done. One take, no laughing. Oh, man, I lost it a few times.
Indeed. When Corbin said, yes, get Masters of Pro Trident because I like Merfolk. Like, I tried my damnedest to hold it together, but. And you heard Ryan, he's cussing me out. Damn it! Just put mute on the fucking mic!
I'm glad people don't hate us after that.
Yeah, we weren't trying to do that spiteful or mean-spirited in any shape, form, or fashion. I hope you got a laugh out of that.
You weren't? I was.
You can't tell people that. PR here. It's all PR.
But, you're going to cut that, right? Good.
Of course, like I cut everything else that we ever air.
That's right.
Hold up, but I think we are going into the quota where we're talking about too much nonsense and not enough magic, because this is a cast about magic and this is a cast about finance.
Spoilers.
And we have spoilers. This is the season that we all dream for. This is what we wake up to. And
have you read, no spoilers, have you read Ajani's Ultimate?
Oh, Ajani's? Wait, they can do Ajani, what?
It's a green-white Ajani, and I will just tell you that one of the abilities
says... Shut your mouth
says,
right now and you let me
hey,
read this.
Hey, don't spoil it for me, goddammit.
All right, read it right now. Hold up. Let's read it.
No, you shut your mouth. Oh, I will mute it. No.
Oh, it's a five casting cost Ajani? No.
Everybody knows what it is.
You gain 100 life.
Oh, what the fucking F.
All right, so I'm going to read this. You guys get away. Hold up, this is my card.
I'm still loading it. Stop.
So this is Ajani, the Mentor of Heroes. It's three colorless, a green and a white for four loyalty planeswalker Ajani. You get plus one, and you can distribute three plus one counters among one, two, or three target creatures you control. Plus one, look at the top four cards of your library. You may reveal an aura, creature, or planeswalker card from among them and put them into your hand. Put the rest at the bottom of your library. In any order. Minus 8. Gain 100 life.
This is awesome.
Okay, so it's in the same fucking color. It's the same color as Doubling Season. Every EDH game you play will suck now. Congratulations, they ruined EDH forever.
You gain 100 life?
Yes, you can just play it and gain 100 life immediately with Doubling Season.
Why does it matter? EDH ends in combos anyways.
This is true. I do not care what happens in EDH.
Yeah. Not really at all.
You gain 100 life. That's awesome.
Like, in EDH, 100 life is really, like, nothing anyway.
You killed him with Sanguine Bond.
Yeah, I just...
Speed bump. That's all it is, a mere speed bump.
Well, now you're already at, like, three colors, so... What color is this?
100 life? Oh my god, I'm playing this card.
How's it three colors? Doubling Season is green.
Right? Yeah, what color is this?
Sanguine Bond. Yeah, Sanguine Bond. Never mind, shut up.
No, this is gonna go into my... This is gonna go into my sweet, I wish I'd put him in the graveyard.
See, you didn't say your general's name because you don't know it.
It's Care of the
Wicked. Going my,
this cast actually care.
It's Care.
Is this card bad or is this card good?
I don't know. That's like, it doesn't protect itself for one. Having this plus one ability putting counters on creatures is good. I mean, obviously you're going to play this in a token deck. And then if you play an aggro, but if you aggro at five, it's just like, no, like,
no, you don't
know. Yeah,
this card feels like it needs a negative one rather than a plus one. It needs to cost four mana.
I want to gain 100 life, and you guys are wrong.
No, you want, what you want to do is, I mean, this card, it gives you, card advantage. Like, you want to play this in a control deck, ultimately.
But then, here's the reality of it. If you gain 100 life, and the time that you've wasted dirtling and doing nothing else, I would rather just play Kiora, and have a bunch of 8/8s, because that will quite quickly make that 100 life go away.
But here's the thing, this card is different things to different people. So the fact that it's got a broad appeal means that I think this card is probably going to just be worth it just on virtue of, like, casual players are going to want to gain that 100 life. Like, some people will see a way to grind out, like, well, you could put the counters on creatures in formats like EDH or, you know, casual decks and do stuff like that. People are going to say, hey, look, I'm drawing cards. Like, I think the fact that different decks can use it.
You haven't talked about anything competitive? And you're looking at this card, I'm looking at this card as the next Karametra. Honestly, like, it's gonna be underpriced at some point, I agree. However, we all know the presale price on every Planeswalker is going to be too high.
Especially one that looks splashy, cause everyone's like, Ralzeric, holy fuck, look at all those turns you'll take. Like, yeah, Ralzeric did nothing.
This card actually does nothing, as far as I can tell.
Okay, no, the difference is, okay, I don't know that this is competitive, I don't really think it is, but it does plus one, and draw a card, basically. Like, card to get some control over. And, you know, so, like, I'm not sure that there's necessarily a deck for it, but in those green-white decks that kind of sort of exist, or maybe would exist if the format wasn't so devotion-heavy, like, I could actually see this, you know, being, like, a one, maybe a two of. Like, I don't think it's going to make a big splash in standard as it is. But
you want to be playing it in an aggressive deck to be able to take advantage of the plus one part. And the other part's a complete control card. Like, the card doesn't get along with itself. That's a problem.
But the good thing is they're both plus one, so it really doesn't matter. Yeah. Like, usually when you're playing a Planeswalker, you're going to get that plus one, and that's all you're working towards. You're building up, or, you know, the other thing. Like, sometimes the two abilities work, but usually one of them is just a dead ability anyway. And you're really kind of going out the one.
I agree, but I think at 5 mana, that's not what you want. I think in your 3 and 4 mana Planeswalkers, that's fine. That's exactly where you want to be. But as soon as a Planeswalker starts costing 5, all of its abilities need to be extremely relevant.
I get you, and then, you know what? And for his first ability, like, you want it in a 4 casting cost Planeswalker. Like, at 5 in an aggressive deck, like, that's not nearly enough. It's not doing enough.
I agree.
Yeah, this card costs 1 too much mana, and they put a plus where a minus should have been.
But in a control deck, I'm loving it. Like, honestly, the more I'm looking at it, like, I'm really, the only problem is, it's like you get auras, creatures, and planeswalkers where a control deck is mostly spells, so all the cards that you want to control with is not there.
It also doesn't protect itself, and it takes 5 turns to gain that 100 life.
Or 0 turns with Deviling Season.
Could this be a sweet one of in the banned control decks?
Anyway, so the point is, the card's overpriced regardless. We can all agree on that, so we should move on.
We don't even know what it's priced at.
We don't.
It's overpriced.
Look at it, though. It says 100 on it. Like, it's going to be overpriced.
It's going to be overpriced because it says the word Planeswalker on it.
I'm too.
Like, you guys are wrong.
You think it's underpriced?
We don't know what its price is.
It's going to start off at 30. It's going to start off at 20, maybe 20, 25, because it's a new Planeswalker. It's the only Celestia.
If this card starts at 10, it's overpriced.
Okay, I will say that it is likely overpriced. I will also say that it's a third set mythic, and it's got sweet, sweet casual appeal because it says you gain 100 life. So whatever point in standard when this becomes really cheap, that's when you buy them all.
So it's exactly Ralzeric.
I think this is sweeter than Ralzeric.
Hey, how much is Ralzeric? Does anybody know?
Worth buying.
Here's what's this worth for you. It's $8 to $10 is the answer.
It's like $4 to $5 for Moto, yeah. That's about right. I see it as a complete Ralzeric. That sounds about right.
Yeah. Yep. I'm gonna jam it in a Bant control deck.
I think Ralzeric is actually just a better card. Because it costs 1 mana.
We want to talk about what else was spoiled today and not talk about the cards that were spoiled on Wednesday or Thursday, so everybody will be like, hey, but the cards are spoiled Wednesday or Thursday.
Well, I want to talk about the card that I'm most excited about. Kuranos, the God of the Storms.
Yeah, card's cool.
This is my kind of card. I wish I could play this in standard right now, but I can't because there's a card called Sphinx's Revelation that will not let this card become any bit valuable. But I mean, so basically there's 3, blue and a red for a legendary enchantment god that happens to be a 6/5, indestructible. Same thing, devotion, go to 7, he isn't a creature. And then you reveal the first card you draw on each of your turns. Whenever you reveal a land card this way, draw a card. Whenever you reveal a non-land card this way, it deals 3 damage to target creature or player.
I'm pretty sure the red, white, blue decks definitely start playing this.
I could see it, but the red, white, blue decks aren't even a factor. In
yeah, they are. There's one that's top 16 in the last two GPs. Like, they're not a major thing, but, like, I mean, top 16 in GP means that it's, like, it's a viable thing, especially now that the blue-red Scryland is out.
But here's the thing. That guy is just a 5-mana enchantment in a control deck.
I mean, yeah,
like, you're not turning that on with detention spheres and shit like that.
You don't need to turn him on. Like, honestly,
exactly. So he's an enchantment.
I agree with that.
Like, that's half of his utility gone.
No, yeah. I completely think as an enchantment, he would probably be excellent at 4, but as an enchantment, he is perfectly viable. If you got a grindy control deck, like, you're gonna get your card value out of him, you're gonna get damage out of him, you can control the board with him, you don't need to do anything. Ask anything out of him, except for to draw the game long. All you need to do is make the game go long, and he is going to get your value out
of it. Supreme Verdict on 4. They play a dude, whatever. You play this on 5, you take a hit, and then you just, like, basically the game ends the next turn, because you just start getting infinite value.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
As soon as you untap with this guy, you just start accumulating value against the control mirrors, because you know the, like, Esper versus Red, White, Blue, you know, those control mirrors, they go like 20 turns. Well, you know what? Bolting their face, worst case scenario, every turn, like, is actually pretty relevant in those control mirrors. And not to mention that obviously drawing cards is, you know, like, and that's the control mirror against the, you know, against the aggro decks. It's probably not great, but against like those Jund decks, Jund monsters, I think it's probably pretty good. Like, that's really good value against those decks too. And they don't kill you fast enough. Like, mono black, it's gotta be good. Like, anyways, I just, like Marcel put it best, it just asks nothing of you, but will reward you just for having it in play. I don't know. I'm a big fan of it. And especially with the blue, white, red, or the blue, red Scryland coming out, I think the blue, white, red, you know, I don't know if it'll be more popular or better than Esper, but I think it will definitely, like, solidify itself as tier one.
But I do think that it's probably not going to get its time to shine again until post-rotation because of Sphinx's revelation. Like, I've tried to build other control decks, and, like, you can get a rock deck, you can get other things. You can play this with Sphinx's revelation, of course. But I think its time to shine won't be until post, Sphinx's revelation. And then, so that may be a good opportunity that you can get this card and get the card, you know, when the card dips down, obviously, once the supply hits, and get them before rotation. I think
all the gods are just, well, maybe all of them's the wrong word, because, like, Karamitra is not necessarily standard playable or whatever, but they all are just so powerful that come rotation, when, you know, some of the stuff, like, Sphinxes rotates out, some of this other stuff, like, they're just so, the effects on them are so powerful, the decks will form around them, I think. Especially the really good ones, like, control decks will probably form around Karanos, because it's such awesome value, and aggro decks will form around Iroas because it's, or Iroas, or however you say the red-white one we'll talk about next, because they just have such powerful effects.
Why don't you read the next one?
Sure. Iroas, God of Victory. 2 colorless, red and white. 7/4, indestructible. Same thing, you have to have 7 devotion. Creatures you control can't be blocked except by 2 or more creatures. Prevent all damage you'll be able to attacking creatures you control. I think this thing's pretty powerful. I don't know if the format is such that it's good right now, but it's powerful enough that after rotation, I think that, you know, this is a pretty good curve topper on the aggro decks.
I think this is, like, actually, I think in the format, you need Boros Charm with this card, and Boros Charm is only going to be in here until rotation, is because, like, this wants a lot of creatures on the board, and Boros Charm allows you to do that with Abandon.
Yeah.
And after, once you have creatures on the board, it's pretty much, they are unstoppable. It doesn't matter making sure they don't die to Supreme Verdict.
Right.
And other bullshit.
I mean, it's kind of like a nombo with Boros Reckoner. It's one of the things, like, when your Reckoner can't take damage and 2-for-1 them, like, that's kind of worse.
Not horribly. Honestly, like, if you're killing them, you're killing them. Like, you know, and then if the Boros Reckoner makes this a 7/4, that can't really be blocked
right.
Well.
I mean, it's definitely, but, like, think about, like, does this solve the problems those decks had? Like, was attacking creatures taking damage, or the fact they can't be blocked except by 2 or more, what kept red-white from being good? Like, I would argue that the fact that it's just full of, like, a bunch of control decks with mass removal is what kept those decks from being good, and this doesn't really stop that.
I should ask Scotty. Scotty's been playing a lot of Naya. He's, like, the Naya guy, so he might have a better insight on that. I haven't played many aggro decks in the past year, so I couldn't tell you offhand. But I think the card is definitely powerful. I don't think it's as bad as people are putting it, making it out to be. I think there's.
Well, I think Aeroes is bad.
There's people are saying that this is not the, like, they're like, Boros Dragon is no good. This is not gonna make the deck anything. This is just a mediocre card.
I don't know how good, like, making Boros Reckoner harder to block, I don't know how good that is. Like, I think you, I don't know.
I mean, you don't have to say, that's if Boros Reckoner's on the board, sure, but if Boros, without this card in play, you know, Boros Reckoner is still a solid card within the deck. It fits a curve, you know, it's a good turn three play. If you don't have this on four, it's still alright to have that card in there. To me, it doesn't seem horrible.
Well, like, I guess my take on it is just that, I both think that A, this card is very powerful, and B, it doesn't solve the problems that the red-white decks needed solved.
I don't know. We were excited about Legion's Initiative a little bit too, weren't we?
I wasn't.
Well, I mean, people. I personally was more excited about, Assemble the Legion, but yeah, I don't know. Like, I've seen a lot of people excited about Aeroes, and we've compared these gods to Eldrazi, and I really think that is a very apt comparison because, like, Karametra is probably the least likely candidate for standard play, and I've seen people jam Karametra in all kind of EDH decks already. You know, people are excited about these gods. I think these will be a thing, and if these get cheap, you want to pick these up at rotation. You guys remember what the Eldrazi were at rotation? They were nothing, and we thought they'd be dirt forever, and we were totally wrong.
I mean, I never thought they'd be dirt, but I definitely didn't think they'd be like what they are now. I think these are, especially the ones that have, you know, abilities more suited for commander play are just going to be gold come rotation. But so $20 on Aeroes.
Oh, I'm too much. Yeah, no thanks.
Yeah, I'm as
we. I mean, almost every pre-sale price of every mythic is going to be too high.
Right.
They've already put the standard for these gods. They pretty much bare minimum 10. That's overpriced for almost all of them.
Well, I think people get really excited and they tend to spout off a bunch of best case scenario stuff online, and the people pricing is like, wow, people are really excited. Somebody just said Painseer is like a Bob with an extra toughness. All right, put them at $12, see if they sell. So I think that's why you want to stay away from, because everyone's thinking best case scenario, and no one's tested with the stuff before they set those pre-sale prices. So once you proxy this stuff up and test it, and if it's actually good, then you can consider buying it. But I would not, without testing extensively, place a pre-order.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about the other mythic that we have, Godsend. One colorless, two white, legendary artifact equipment, mythic, 3 to equip. Equip creature gets +3/+3. Whenever it blocks or becomes blocked by one or more creatures, exile one of those creatures. It doesn't target. It just exiles whichever one you want. Opponents can't cast cards with the same name as cards exiled with Godsend. A lot of people just kind of were like, ho-hum to this, I believe. Is that how you guys feel?
I like this card.
Yeah, I do too.
So Jeff Hoogland said that this is a one way to deal with a True Name Nemesis that they block because it doesn't target or anything. It just exiles it and they can't play another True Name Nemesis. So it's not that, oh, you're going to get somebody with this, but it's like they can't block your creature with Godsend. The problem is Godsend going to be better than a Batterskull or an Umezawa's Jitte? And maybe in the sideboard, but I'm not super excited about it in Legacy.
It costs a lot of mana, and like you said, it basically gives your guy unblockable.
Yeah.
You know, like, so you're paying 6 mana to give guy +3/+3 and unblockable.
So that, it's a really good Whisper Soul Cloak.
Yeah. That.
I mean, Loxodon Hammer was a pretty decent in standard. I could see this played as a one of, a two of, maybe.
Hammer gave lifelink. Like, it both made your creature hard to block and made racing bad for them, like.
True, and trample.
Or maybe it didn't give lifelink then. What was
no, it Loxodon Warhammer is 3-0 trample lifelink. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
That's not an app comparison, but I don't know. I think it'll see play in standard. It's just so powerful.
I mean, we talked about things that the red-white deck needs. Like, one of those things was more resilience to removal. I mean, this is kind of a card like that because it makes a single threat more scarier. So, I don't know.
I think you want to play this in a token deck because sure. I mean, if you could cycle back and forth, you could attack with, you know, go in for 4, put this on another creature and they just want to attack you because, you know, it's just, yeah. I don't know. I don't see, you got to make a deck for this. I don't see this slotting into any existing deck.
Yeah.
So because of that, I just don't think it's going to have the chance to really shine until later, but it's just so powerful that I think there is an opportunity for it in standard.
Okay, so besides that, I mean, we have the temples, the blue, red, and the green, black. I know we've talked before about how the green, black temple makes the dredge archetype a little better. Are there any other cards, before we get on to Eidolon of Blossoms that you guys want to talk about?
Sage of Hours looks horrible.
Sage of Hours is going to go in my Vorall the Hulklade EDH deck. Let's talk about the Dictates, actually. Cause those are actually a pretty interesting cycle. So.
Yeah, I like the Howling Mine one a lot.
Yeah, because what people said about Howling Mine the most was, like, it's great, but it sucks that your opponent gets to draw extra first. You play it, you pass the turn, they draw first. Now you can play this on their turn and make sure you're the one that benefits. And people were already talking about, oh, you're pushing Dictated Crowfix on their turn and play Notion Thief. But I really think this is just something you play EOT, so you're the first one who draws, and I think that's pretty cool.
Sure. I mean, do you think it is relevant financially or in standard or anything like that?
Well, here's the deal. Like, how many times has Howling Mine been printed? And that's $1 million. This goes in that, it goes in that Nekusar deck. So all that stuff is up currently. So I don't think there's downside necessarily. I'm not super bullish on it, but, you know, it seems okay.
It depends on what the price is. I mean, I think both that and Sage have the potential to be like $3 rares.
What is
just
safe?
Because they have that cute factor that, like, everybody's going to want them immediately for those you know, Nagusar decks or the Voral decks and stuff like that. And I feel like there will definitely be some people who are at least playing around with them in standard, especially with the Johnny being, you know, if you have any other ways to add +1/+1 counters, I guess the Johnny and the Sage kind of make a cute soft lock.
Go ahead and read the Sage for us.
Okay. So there's a blue 1/1. Has heroic. Whenever you cast a spell that targets it, put a +1/+1 counter on it, and you remove all +1/+1 counters from Sage of Hours. For each 5 counters removed this way, take an additional turn after this one.
Yeah, 2 mana mythic.
Yep.
Is it mythic?
Yep.
It's mythic.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how we got off of the Dictates, because there's not much else to say about Sage of Hours, I don't think.
I don't either.
Never mind.
Go ahead.
No, we were just talking about how those cards will hold value just because that casual appeal, and both of them just feel like cards that people are going to want to bust.
Oh, both Sage of Hours and Dictated Crowfix?
Yeah.
As long as we're talking about that segues nicely into talking about Dictated of the Twin Gods, which is a Furnace of Wrath effect. If you look at Furnace of Wrath and Fire Servant and all kind of cards like that, those retain their value too. Fire Servant's been printed a few times, Furnace of Wrath's been printed a few times. They're still surprisingly high. If you do any buy listing and you run across a bunch of crap like that, I'm really surprised how much Furnace of Wrath effects are still worth. And, you know, anything that says double or twice or, you know, casual players like that kind of stuff. So this Dictate of the Twin Gods is really going to appeal. Like, having Flash might not even be all that relevant for casuals. I don't know if this gets played in Standard. I kind of hope it does. Like, War Leader's Helix or something, that'd be kind of cool. You know, Boros Charm, there's some burn stuff. This gives you good top end of your curve, but like the two Dictates, I think this is a cycle, so I'd be interested to see what the other ones are, but those right now I think could probably hold their value.
Okay. So I mean, yeah, we'll see what else we've got. I'm sure there's a couple more surprises. Now before we move on, one thing I want to point out, and this kind of goes with something we've talked about in the past, there's another cycle that's kind of, I think, obviously fallen under the radar here, and that cycle is these cards that care about how many lands you can have. So like Squelching Leeches, you know, it's a 4-mana star, it's power and toughness equal to the number of swamps you control. It seems like, and this is real speculation, but it seems like these could be hinting at a land matters theme, which, you know, we don't know anything about the fall set. We know that people are speculating fetch lanes are going to be reprinted. Here we have a cycle of cards that is seemingly random, and maybe it is random. Maybe it's just existing to push the monocolored devotion sort of theme, but it could also be a hint at a land block coming up. Just throwing it out there.
Yeah, we always have these conspiracy theories, you know? Like, we're like, oh, you know, this means this and this means this. And you talk to somebody in R&D, like, a year after the set's out, they're like, yeah, that was something from the Great Designer Search that we liked, and we never found a place to put it in.
Yeah.
And that's usually all there is to it.
Could mean nothing.
I think there's one thing to watch out for, too. I don't know that it's necessarily going to happen. It's just something that came up on my radar. with Prismatic Omen being a potential need for a reprint. I mean, it doesn't have to be reprinted. It's not that expensive, but it's certainly a card that, you know, it sees occasional modern play. It's not really worth a ton, or sorry, it hasn't been seeing a ton of play lately, but it's still got a quite high price tag. It may be safe just to move those now if you don't think you're going to need them anytime soon, just in case, because it does seem like something that could fit into this set quite nicely. Because it really does add to that whole rare cycle of, you know, like you said, land matters.
That could work. I could see that, possibly. I just don't like how those are, like, right butt up against Ravnica. Yet again, it just seems like, you know, there's more cards that are going to strengthen the existing decks, and we're not going to see these multicolored cards really take off. I just think, you know, standard sucks. Doesn't look like it's going to do much.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you.
How do you really
But with every new set, there's that new hope that standard will be fixed.
It will be. It's called rotation.
Complain if you want. Standard is in a pretty decent place right now.
It's better than it was 3 months ago, that's for sure.
And it's better than each of the last
one of the cards we talk about that has already sold out from some of the pre-sales I was seeing was that Hall of Triumph.
Yeah, I think this has potential in Mono Blue. I mean, think about it. You got Master of Wave tokens that stick around after your Master of Wave is gone. It's not bad.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. I just thought about it as more of a casual thing just because obviously Glorious Anthem effects are cool, but not being in white, you don't typically get a ton of them. And this is definitely something you can play in any monocolored, you know, commander formats. And it was like 50 cents to a dollar. So just to know.
I mean,
like,
look how much Adaptive Automaton's worth.
Yeah, I mean, I think Tribal's probably more popular than just the color thing, but the fact that this is colorless, I like it a lot too. I mean, it does kind of hurt that it's a legendary.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, all in all, I think it's pretty solid as well.
Let's talk about this new ability. It's called Constellation. It's one of the new keywords for the set. And basically, with Constellation is when they're all on enchantment creatures, whenever that creature comes into play, or another enchantment enters the battlefield, you get an ability. A triggered ability happens. So the big one that we're talking about is Eidolon of Blossoms, which is two colorless and green-green for a 2/2 enchantment creature spirit with Constellation. Whenever Eidolon of the Blossoms or another enchantment enters the battlefield under your control, draw a card. So we got our new enchantress for standard. It costs 4 mana. That's a 2/2. Some people are saying this is the next coming to Christ. Some people are saying this is crap. And the biggest card behind this is going to be Mono Bloom. There's been a lot of talk about Mono Bloom. Some people have went deep because Mono Bloom essentially goes back into your hand every turn and then you can cast it as another enchantment, creating a pretty good loop with these Constellation keyword. So what do you guys think about this? What do you think about the hype behind this? Do you think it has any legs? Do you think this is a deck that has potential? Or do you think that some people are going to be pretty upset that they spent such amount of money on Mono Blooms?
I think we got 4 different opinions, which is weird that we can have 4 different opinions because it's a yes or no question. But Corbin is the most opinionated on this. I'll let him go first.
I think that people really want – I think it's a natural when you look at stuff and Magic to want to build linearly. You know, people do it with, like, creatures. I see a Minotaur Lord, so I want to make a Minotaur Tribal deck. Okay, people are doing the same thing. I see Constellations. I want to make an enchantment deck. Okay? And, you know, if the argument is this is a kind of a casual F&M sort of thing, you know, that's, you know, sure, that's fine. But people are on this new keyword that's coming out in a third set. So there's only a couple, like, there's very few cards that it's actually going to be on. And they think it's going to make an impact in standard. And it's certainly possible, but it's extremely unlikely. Because while you're playing with this linear set of cards, that being enchantments, and even more specifically, good cards with Constellation on them, well, your opponent who is playing Mono Black or Esper just gets a pick from the most powerful cards in the format. So your plan is, you know, I see this enchantress, and drawing cards is really good. So I'm going to pay 4 mana and then play all these enchantments, and I'm just going to have this big draw engine. Meanwhile, your opponent is just going to play a Underworld Connections on their third turn and a Desecration Demon on their fourth turn and do the same thing you've done, except that they get a 6/6 flyer and you have a 2/2 4 mana guy that replaces himself when he comes in. Like, I'm not saying that you can't make a, you know, a deck that could be good with it. I'm saying that the format, like, it's very, very, very difficult for, at this point in a format's life with this many sets into it, for a new deck to come out of nowhere with no cards already. Like, if this was a fringe deck, you know, if there's a heavy enchantment deck, some fringe cards, and now you get these engines and it just kicks it into tier one, like, that's one thing. Instead, you have people specking by binding to Mana Bloom on a deck that has done nothing and doesn't exist and there's not a single list for. All they see is, oh, here's a Mana Bloom that I can return to my hand every turn and get some sort of value in a format full of nothing but removal for your Constellation guys. You know, I think it's, you know, I understand why people want to do it, and I think the biggest reason it did is because Mana Bloom is essentially a bulk rare. And, you know, I get that. Like, you're really not going to lose a lot of money, but it's very difficult to make money because everyone, even in their best case scenario, is like, Mana Bloom's going to hit $1.50, and I'm going to sell mine for $1, and then, oh, I profit. Except that you're putting so much work into a card you're buying for 20 cents to try to get, you know, a couple dollars out of a playset that, like, you're not covering your time costs there very well because it's not that easy to move 300 copies of a card. So I mean,
or you're like getting 20 copies and you're like, oh, I'll just sell these at the shop, and then you made 25 cents.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, what, you know, I like, people are doing it because it's so cheap to buy in, and that's literally what's driving it, is that they say, this doesn't matter, this is $5 I'm putting in, now I've got this, and if it hits, great. And like I said, I get that. It's hard to fault somebody for wanting to do that. But that doesn't make it a good spec, right? I mean, it's just not a thing.
So I don't like it as a spec for a different reason than Corbin. And my change happened in less than a 6-hour period. So when they spoil the Constellation mechanic, I'm like, all those people that have Mana Blooms are going to be happy. So what happened was they announced that the set was going to be enchantment based. And this is Theros we're talking about. So 6 months ago, people were like, oh, Theros is enchantment based. People were buying all kind of cards that dealt with enchantments, and someone was like, hey, there's probably some enchantment fall card. So everyone was speculating there would be an enchantment fall card in Theros, and people were like, well, Mana Bloom would be good with that. Everyone's best case scenario was draw a card when you play an enchantment. And Mana Bloom is basically a reusable trigger, because Enchantress plays Wild Growth and stuff like that, and this is a reusable Wild Growth. You get all those, you know, enchantment fall triggers. Why not? Sounds good. So everyone's best case scenario was something that says draw a card when you play an enchantment. So they spoil Constellation, like, early in the morning on, like, Friday? Was it last week or this week? I don't remember when it was. Monday. I think it was maybe Monday. So they spoiled Whitewater Naiads. And that has an enchantment, the Constellation trigger, creature can't be blocked. Great. So I'm like, well, since Constellation's a thing, I bet people are going to go nuts buying Mana Bloom. And sure enough, they did. And I was like, great. I hope that if there's a card that says draw card, they don't spoil it for 2 more weeks. My logic there is it'll give people time to, you know, kind of anticipate it. So I think the anticipation of Eidolon of Blossoms was going to sell lots of copies of Mana Bloom and make it a good spec. But the fact that it was spoiled 6 hours after the Whitewater Naiads gives everybody a chance to go sleeve this up and test it. I didn't want people testing it because I think once you play Eidolon of Blossoms with Mana Bloom, you're going to see that it's not that good. So I was kind of hoping I would have time to buy a bunch of copies and, you know, get them and have them listed for sale when everyone goes, oh, I'm going to buy it and test it with Eidolon of Blossoms. But now everyone's just going to proxy this, you know, because I wanted it to be spoiled right before they went on sale. And the fact that everyone's going to have all this time to proxy up the deck and see that it's not that great, like, that's going to hurt the pre-sale price of Eidolon of Blossoms, and it's going to make Mana Bloom just a terrible spec. So, like, within 6 hours, my hopes were completely dashed. I think Eidolon of Blossoms doesn't combo with Mana Bloom is like, if it were 2 mana 1/3 or something like that, it would be better, but I still don't think it's that good. But people had to test it to see it was bad, and they're not going to test the theoretical card because they don't know how to build a deck around that. But now they have something tangible. I think people are going to come to the realization that it's not going to be that great. I think the people benefiting are the people that bought in Theros and are sitting on those copies, and they're selling into the hype. But if you're buying them now, it's way too late. I don't care at what price you're buying in.
Well, I mean, the thing is, there's hype, but the price hasn't exactly moved. Buy lists haven't moved on the card. It's still available at near bulk rates online. And people have, you know, they came out and they're like, oh, Enchantress is a really powerful deck. Therefore, this effect must be good, without necessarily understanding why Enchantress is a powerful deck. And it's a one, it has a critical mass of, you know, basically Constellation cards. Two, it's that its best one that draws you a card is it has Shroud, so it just sits there and can't really be interacted with. And three, it's a combo deck. Like, I mean, the deck just starts comboing off with itself. In Standard, you're paying 4 mana to cycle a card, get a 2/2, and then try to draw cards. Whereas your opponents are going to make it all up with one big Sphinx's Revelation at the end of your turn. They're just going to kill your guy, and then you're stuck with Mana Bloom and other, you know, mediocre constellation creatures. You know, I just don't see it. And moreover, I just don't like specking on something that doesn't exist and doesn't even sort of exist. And people just want to make it a thing. And I've heard the argument, well, everyone seems to be doing this, so doesn't that make it a good spec? And no, it doesn't. Because lots and lots of them have sold in the past week, and the price is still nowhere.
So, Ryan, you said you thought you had a good opinion on this card. What's your outlook?
I mean, the way I look at it is I think the concept behind the Constellation deck is cute enough that enough people will play it, whether it is, you know, this big competitive tournament worthy deck or not, to drive the price up some, because it does what a lot of people want to do, which is, you know, people weren't just wishing that there was this card that, you know, drew cards for them off of essentially what Constellation is. They were wanting that because it's fun to play. They weren't necessarily, you know, like a lot of the people you hear online aren't the people who are going to the Pro Tour or Grand Prix. They're people who play in their FNMs, and they're still going to jam this deck.
So whether or not,
and I think this is honestly, I don't think it's going to be this amazing spec that's worth a ton of money, and I don't think you necessarily want to be getting in now, but I'm not sad about the hundreds of copies I'm sitting here looking at that I bought into before, because I got them at like 18 cents a piece. I will not lose money on them regardless.
Yeah, I agree.
Go deep on, but I think it's certainly something that might be worth having a playset of, because it could crop up in a deck. You never know.
Well, here's the thing, that my take on it. This is basically what I would say, like, if we're all kind of in agreement that it's not going to be a good deck, then the peak demand, so to speak, is going to come when everyone's rushing to speculate on it. Okay. And that was 2 days ago, 3 days.
I don't think so. I'm not saying it can't be a real deck. I'm just saying I think there will be enough support for the card. You have to remember, a lot of the people who also are in this casual group, in this casual crowd, aren't the people who are combing spoilers the moment they come out. They may not have seen this card yet. You have to give it time. And, I mean, outside of the people who go seeking spoilers, not a whole lot of people know this card exists yet.
Okay. That's an interesting take for sure, that casual approach on it. I mean, to me, it feels like this is, you know, the peak run-up time on it, because all these speculators are getting in, and the TCG mint price is 30 cents.
Yeah, I still think, but I mean, if it comes a dollar card, I mean, there's still room for potential of it to, you know, hit somewhere. Like, you're still gonna make some money off of it. And like, if Ryan got in at 18 cents, I don't think that's a bad thing, but anyone trying to get in at 50 cents to a dollar, you just may be completely mistaken.
Oh yeah, no, I would hold off on that for sure. I mean, like I said, I don't think it's gonna be competitive enough to be mainstream and see, you know, $3 or $4. But I think it could happily see $1.50 and even potentially hit a buy list for 50 cents, in which case I'm plenty fine with that. Anywhere from 35 to 50 cents for me, I'll be happy getting out at.
And I don't think this card, Eidolon of Blossoms, is actually as bad as you guys are making it. Sure, it's 4 mana, but if this is in standard.
Personally.
I think, yeah, I mean, it replaces itself for 1, and I think they actually probably ticked up, I think this was a 3 casting cost card, and in development they said it was just too powerful and they moved it to 4. The one thing that I have against it is, like, you're going to want to play an all-enchantment deck, so that makes it, yeah, again, super casual, but...
The creatures are enchantments, though. Like, I don't want this with Mana Bloom, but I'm not saying Eidolon of Blossoms is bad. Like, how good is it to flash in a Boonsetter and draw a card? Yeah. Like, it's going to do good things.
Agreed.
Maybe, but it's not going to be a Mana Bloom related.
But if you're going to play this, you want to play with Mana Bloom, because then you're casting on turn 3, which is, it makes all the sense of the world. Like, you know, Mana Bloom, turn 1. Or 2, and then you could cast this on 3.
You cast it on 3, and it replaces itself, and then your Mana Bloom replaces itself on turn 4, I guess, if you play it.
Exactly.
The problem is, like, what is your opponent doing while you're doing this? Like, they're playing a Pack Rat, and then you're dead. Like,
yeah, but this post-rotation, there's not going to be Pack Rat, and those decks are going to be there, and all these enchantment creatures are going to be all around.
Right, right. So, and like you said, we're... Speaking of Mana Bloom, Mana Bloom's gone in rotation.
True,
the Eidolon itself, and this whole jam all the enchantment creatures, you know, we don't know enough about that to say that is bad, but the current standard format, which is the only one we're speculating on Mana Bloom, makes sense, because, you know, come rotation, it's gone too. It's just not gonna, I mean, you're gonna do these things, and on turn 4, you're gonna have drawn a couple cards and have some cool cards in play, and they're gonna have 3 Pack Rats, or they're gonna have a Desecration Demon, like,
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think it's a standard deck, because Mono Blue Devotion and Mono Black Devotion are so tightly tuned. You got Seasons of Revelation making Esper such a deck that having these, you know, coming, these new gimmicky decks coming in at the end of a rotation is not going to make an impact in here. So it's not going to do that. So I agree with you that Mono Bloom is not going to be a standard card. But as Ryan says, like, you know, the casual appeal is going to be more than enough. Because same thing with, like, Seder Fire Dancer. That card, I don't know why it's as expensive as it is. It's because the casual players all want to build a deck around that card.
It's the same reason Vexing Devil held play. It's like, you know, you'd occasionally see Vexing Devil pop up somewhere. But it had so much casual appeal that it just held this extreme price throughout its time in Standard and even afterwards. It's back up to $6 on the buy list again. And I mean, that recovered quicker than most cards from those sets. Some of those are some of the safest bets you can make.
Yeah.
If you, including the whole Mana Bloom deal, you just look at what the pieces of that deck already have. And yeah, they might not be the best cards in Standard, but they are some of the flashiest and most enjoyable cards. You have Courser of Crucifix, you have Prophet of Crucifix, you have this new card. I mean, all of these cards play really well together and seem like a lot of fun to jam, even if the deck isn't great. You know, at the times you get to go off, you had a lot of fun playing. And I think that's going to be a major appeal factor for people.
Yeah, but the casual players already had the deck built. Like, Enchantress is, like, Eidolon of Blossoms is the worst Enchantress they've ever printed. So if Mana Bloom wasn't good because of their, like, 0-1, 2-mana, can't-be-targeted Enchantress, I don't see how a 4-mana 2-2 is going to make it go up. Yeah, the only thing I could see is if there's a hypothetical card that does something other than draw a card, but nobody could conceive of anything that was better than that. When people talked about what they wanted, everyone wanted a card that drew a card when you played it, and that's why Mana Bloom was bought 6 months ago. So if they hypothetically, like, released, like, a 2-mana 2-2 that tears a creature when you play an enchantment, then yeah, Mana Bloom could pay off, but I don't think it, like, the casuals could play Mana Bloom this whole time and haven't been.
Right.
Okay. I'm not talking about Mana Bloom. I'm talking about the new creature. I'm saying, like I said, regardless of Mana Bloom, I'm talking about this entire deck in theory just seems like something that is very much on board with what casual people want to be doing. And, I mean, I learned a lot this past weekend talking to a lot of people at a local show I had. It's definitely a much more casual crowd, and they play a lot of Standard. They just don't play the same Standard as everybody else does because no one at their shop plays like that. And that's for this whole new set of cards. And it made me realize that, you know, Prophet of Crucifix, as much as I'm happy getting $2 on the buy list right now, because that's a score to me when I was picking those cards up at nothing, that card has even further to grow. Everyone loves that card, whether it be the competitive player who wants to jam it in something, all the way to that casual person, all the way to the commander player.
Yeah, it's the commander player that's going to make that card expensive as hell in a couple of years.
Yeah. I think they get banned in Commander.
Honestly, I think it has some potential. Who are trying to build this blue-green Kiora, Prophet of Crucifix, just jamming all of these cards into one deck. It's very much something. I mean, blue-green in and of itself has always been a popular color combination for casual players because it involves a lot of drawing cards, a lot of ramping, a lot of playing fun, big, giant things, and still having, you know, some control over the game without having to just run a bunch of counterspells. But now you're giving them the tools that they want in a Standard environment. And I think that's why you're seeing something like Prophet of Crucifix spiking immediately, because it's not just from the commander play that's making that card a $4 card.
$4 cards, does that sound like a pick of the week?
Pick of the week?
Yeah, actually,
pick of the week!
It's time for the pick of the week.
I was going to say, I think that is probably my pick of the week. I think
that was my pick of the week at $2. Like,
yeah,
what are you doing? You shit on it, and now you're saying, "Oh, I don't want $2 on the buy list anymore because I talked to casuals." I'm glad that casuals influence your life more than me.
I'm glad you need to re-listen to podcasts because I didn't disagree with you at all. I've liked that card from the beginning, and I don't understand where you're at coming at from that one. But
I don't know. I just like attacking you.
I mean. Yeah.
That's what Corbin does. Anytime someone brings up a card that Corbin said earlier, he's like, "You guys shit on it when I brought it up." So I thought it'd be funny to do this to you.
I may be confusing shit on my card picks and shit on me because you guys just do both.
Shut up, Corbin.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think shitting on you, I mean, sometimes you have some good picks of the week and then I wait a couple weeks and I steal it. But,
remember?
But no, I think Prophet has, I mean, it really is gonna depend on if Blue Green gets a couple more cards. I would like to see a solid counterspell somewhere in those colors out of this set. I don't know if we'll get it. But...
Plasm Capture, Ryan. You can get your Plasm Captured, okay? What could be a better counterspell in those colors?
Gross.
You're wrong. Anyways,
could be good.
Picks of the week. Who wants to go first?
Ryan just did because Ryan's plan was to wait for the conversation to take us to a pick of the week because everyone has one written down on the show notes but Ryan. His plan was to wing it and one totally fell in his lap, and I hate that things worked out for him. Okay. I hate that we rewarded him.
That's not a pick of the week. That was from last week, so that was just the default.
Who wants to go next?
Me.
I'll go. Hold up. I'm first. So my pick of the week is going to be another proxy through Chris Lansdale. I saw him at GP Montreal, and he kept telling me about this card, and I didn't want to believe him, and I actually still kind of don't believe him, but...
But you're going to put your name behind it anyways.
I'm going to just throw it out there because I think, you know, I like cards that have low bottoms and, you know, a good chance to go up higher. And this is Karabetra, the god of the harvest, known as the worst god in all of Theros. Most disappointing god that we've ever seen.
Only for standard, though.
For standard, yeah. See, yeah, exactly. It has a great chance for EDH. I think there's good potential there. But in standard, I don't think it's completely... I mean, sure, his ability doesn't do much of anything once you get to that point. But, I mean, if you're drawing a land off of every one of your creatures that come in, there's some upside to that. That is, it's thinning out your deck. It is propelling your Sphinx's Revelation to absurd levels if you get to there. I don't know what kind of deck this is. He didn't quite explain to me.
It's a commander deck.
He didn't quite explain it, but I think it's only $1 online. It's not going to go below that. It's $3 in paper. Like, there's an upside here. So I don't know if you want to go deep on this, but I definitely think, you know, at least picking up your playset for dirt cheap and, you know, crossing your fingers and hoping that it goes up is worthwhile.
I want to see if it goes down. I'm glad you went because I really want to fillet this card. This is, if we're right about these gods being Eldrazi and this one's dirt and it's like has some of the most casual appeal, I think this is just ideal. If this hits $2, I'm all in. So I want to watch it. I don't think I'm in at $3. What's that?
It's headed that way. Like it's slowly dropping towards that $3 mark and may go below.
Yeah. I mean, this is solid. This is a card to watch for sure. And that's like, I threw it in Mayel like 2 weeks ago and I was sold in the first time I jammed it out there. So like long term, it's not standard that propels these prices. So you really got to pay attention to what other formats are. And yeah, you know what? You can throw me and Lansdale under the bus if we end up wrong and totally go wipe your hands of this because I'm 100% behind this card.
Okay. I wouldn't put it out there if I didn't think it had legs, so.
I mean, so like, now I understand the buy-in's higher on this card, but what about Phoenix? Like, if we think there's this commander casual play gonna propel, this card, I mean, doesn't Phoenix with the mill aspect, like, which is also bottomed out in price, or it seems
mill is really good in multiplayer 100 card singleton. What are you talking about?
Do you think it's commander, and like, do you think the commander value of Karametra is like, larger than the casual value of a milling god? Like,
I mean, Phoenix is $8 on Karametra is $3.
That's what I'm saying. Like, the buy-in's different. Yes. But like graph-wise, both look the same. So like, we in theory would assume that the percentage growth would be the same.
I think there's higher potential in the Phoenix just because it is a mill god. And actually, Phoenix in a mill deck is not that bad. It's actually pretty good.
It's gotta be insane in your casual mill deck.
Yeah.
Well, casual mill decks don't have a ton of creatures.
Yeah, well, you could build around it to make it with a ton of creatures, and then all of a sudden you
like love it. Yeah, I thought about that too, but are you cutting Traumatize to put in Doorkeeper? Are you cutting Glimpse the Unthinkable to put in
I've always hated Traumatize.
Never mind, Nemesis of Reason. Oh my god, that's so good.
Yeah, with Nemesis, yeah, this builds up.
Tap him for 7? No, wait, it's better to just swing with him.
Wall of
Flame. No. If you tap the Nemesis, it builds it up and he keeps getting incrementally bigger for everything that goes in the graveyard.
No, you're thinking the Consuming Aberration.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Wall of Frost. What's the like OH Shroud Wall from
Wall
of Reborn?
Because I don't want to build a shitty mill deck on the air. I would rather just do our picks.
I've actually built this shitty mill deck in standard. It was green. It was bug, basically. And I had Prophet, Kosair Krufix, and I had the Caryid, along with the Long Wall Frost. And
I'm talking about the casual decks that are actually going to drive the price of Phoenix in 2 years.
Yeah, well, it didn't have legs. It was not bad. It just wasn't going to go nowhere. But, I mean, it didn't fit in the standard. The standard just got overran. But, yeah, I think long-term you can make a deck with this in a mill deck with the casual appeal, and people are going to try to make it happen. So Phoenix is a card I think long-term is good.
I guess what we're saying is most of the gods, I think, have good upside.
Yeah.
Especially the ones that aren't in Theros.
Yep.
Because they've been open way less.
Yep.
Okay, I've got one that,
Why do you get to go next? Marcel said I could go, and I let him go.
Oh my god.
I even have an actual pick of the week to go whenever I get a chance to interrupt somebody too.
I'll go last. Go, Jason.
No, go ahead.
Quit being so fucking polite, damn it.
Fine. Frank. I'll go. So I think.
Why does Ryan get to go next? Alright.
Shut up. Ryan, talk.
I think something you should be picking up is something I didn't actually notice until this previous weekend because I hadn't seen a lot of them in people's binders. But there's a lot of random rares from the original Commander sets that are suddenly popping up on buy lists for $1.50, $2. And a lot of these cards, an example is Sewer Nemesis, which most people don't even know what the card does. Honestly, I can't remember what the card does. I know it's a star type creature, but those kinds of cards that have only been printed once in those kind of decks are, you know, suddenly becoming worth money because even if they're only in, you know, niche EDH decks or niche casual decks, there's not a lot of copies out there. I mean, you're looking at one for each one of those rounds of Commander decks that came out, meaning every store may have gotten 4 or 5 rounds, but that's still only, what, 2 or 3 copies of each deck per round?
Think about and it this I way. One Sewer Nemesis exists for every, like, Chaos Warp or Flusterstorm out there.
Exactly.
It's the same number.
That's kind of not true, but yeah, it's kind of...
Shut your mouth!
I mean, we've got a Judge promo on Flusterstorm.
Okay, then...
Arsenal on Chaos Warp.
Edric. Edric's a good pick of the week. That's
Commander's Arsenal. Edric already went up last week.
Yeah, it's triple the price now. It's like a $13 card. No, Sewer Nemesis, you're totally right, Ryan. Randomly went from like $2 and bumped up to like $4 last week.
It's a rat.
It's a horror.
Yeah, it's not a rat at all. It's a random card, but I started noticing, what I did was I was at the show and I saw a bunch of these Commander rares and I didn't really have prices on them and I hadn't had them on my buy list or anything. So I just shot a quarter across the board on stuff to see what it was at. You know, I figured I was going to lose somewhere, going to be a couple of bulk rares. And I was really surprised how many of them I found that I could rebuy list if I wanted to for $1.50, $2 a piece. And I just didn't realize that there was that much value in those little Commander decks with the smaller rares now too. And I mean, that's also something to note about these new Commander series because you're going to have a lot of cards out of those that are, you know, very playable again in those niche decks and aren't worth anything right now. And since you have these decks that you busted open for the cards that are worth money, instead of just, you know, selling those as bulk rares, it may be best to evaluate them, look at the ones that you don't expect to be reprinted, and just lock those away for a year or two. Because they have proven to gain value. And again, it's a very, very short print, so if there's any demand at all, that card is going to go up.
So do you think, after we've seen, you know, like Kalia, that sort of thing went up before Edric just went up, do you have any pick if you were to, like, looking at those Commander decks from what you've seen, is like, you know, the next one to go?
The next major general one?
Or just, you know, something, because we're talking about cards in those sets that have only have one printing or whatever, you know, is there anything that you actually look at as a target for people?
I haven't taken a close enough look at the Commander series yet. Like I said, I just noticed that this past weekend when I was buying. And it was something that, it was just, you know, it's something I'd noticed before that I had seen more and more copies less and less copies in bulk and more copies in people's binders. And so that kind of was an initial hint to me that maybe this card was starting to be worth money. And then, you know, once I, you know, obviously bought the copies and saw that they did have value, it really just, it kind of made me look at the entire set. So I'll be taking another look here this week probably and potentially have something next week, but there is definitely nothing but value to gain from picking those up because not enough of them, if any of them, will be reprinted as most of them are very strange commander only cards.
I'm with you and I'll go on record as Damia being a really good one.
All the ones that are generals are just going to go nuts. Like Animar suddenly was $15 just overnight.
Yeah. Like, and I think the generals are the obvious.
It didn't go up overnight. It crept up, but nobody like really paid attention. Everyone's like, oh, I know Animar. Animar's an $8 card. Animar's an $8 card. Then all of a sudden you check again. You're like, it's not $8 at all. So I think anything that gets played as a general, the Mimeoplasm, like, is probably a good one. I think Dami is a good one. I think Gyarados, not Gyarados anymore.
Not got a lot of things that could, It's looking like it could be very soon to double.
What is going to be very soon to double?
Damia, however you say it.
Yeah.
Combined with the momentum from these other cards from the set, that seems like a really good next one. Caridor, maybe. I know it just got.
Oh, Caridor is the judge for. Yeah, I don't know.
So you guys got picks of the week? Let's hear those.
Okay. I'm stealing mine from the internet. Everybody's talking about Replenish. So the thing about Constellation is, like, if you play one Mana Bloom a turn, great. But if you Replenish and dump a whole graveyard full of enchantments out, like, can you imagine, like, getting a million card triggers or a million tap a creature triggers or just, like, Replenish is going to be a real powerful effect with Constellation. So I think that's a card people are going to speculate heavy on. If you look at something like Academy Rector that got a little bit of play in Legacy, look at the price of Academy Rector, and there are as many Replenishes. So do the math. I think Replenish, based on the hype, like, I don't think it has to do anything because there's so much hype. So Replenish seems like it gets there.
Yeah, and I know that's one that people have been talking about, you know, kind of ever since there was the enchantment block announced. And, you know, it did raise a little bit, but really not that much. So
people don't remember 6 months ago.
Yeah.
If people don't remember 2 years ago for Food Chain, they're not going to remember 6 months ago for, like, people already talking about Mana Bloom, you know, again, like it's brand new. So I think renewed hype is going to, you know, make the price go up again from where it is now.
All right, I'll jump in. I'm going to go with something that surprisingly has more and more modern applications when you wouldn't expect it. That's Sigil of the Empty Throne. These mono-white-ish prison decks, basically, that just kind of want to prevent your opponent from doing a lot of things that eventually slowly win with Sigil of the Empty Throne. The random enchantment from Conflux that costs 5 mana whenever you cast an enchantment spell, put an angel into play. You know, this is something that was kind of on the radar when Theros came out. It's randomly making a appearance in Modern. It's been in several 4-0 decks on dailies, you know, along with everything else, just with the Constellation and stuff like that. The graph on this thing makes it look like a pretty good investment at $2. And it was reprinted in Plane Chase 2012. So it's already been reprinted. It's probably not super high on the list of reprints. So yeah, that's my pick.
I loved this card when it was in Standard. I played this with I forgot the name of the card.
Crater Hoof Behemoth?
No, it was like white enchantment where you created,
Hoofprint of the Stag?
Yeah, Hoofprint of the Stag.
Nice. Ugh,
that was a great deck.
Remember.
That was a casual deck of just goodness, and I do like the Sigil. So I think that's a good card.
I have a friend who one of the first decks I helped him make was like an enchantment deck that I think it was Cage of Hands is the card that like was basically pacifism that you could return to your hand or face feather, stuff like that with a Sigil engine to win. And Idyllic Tutor, which we know is really expensive. So it's definitely a casual appeal as well. As much as anything else. All right, so I know we've gone long. Is there anything else you guys want to talk about?
No. We're going to be telling people that, sorry, we said we had a contest for the caption contest, and my life's been a little too busy for me to deal with it. And I apologize. Next time we're not going to announce a contest before we actually get the content up. That'll be a future thing that we'll do now, Jason.
We're building anticipation is what we're doing. Like, when we finally do get that page up, you guys are going to be so excited because you will be mentally making these captions. So I'm really happy for you guys in the future getting to do this contest finally.
Why do you have a degree as a chemist and not in PR? It just astounds me.
All right. So everyone, thanks for listening. I'm sure by the time you get this, you'll have way better spoilers than the spoilers we talked about. So enjoy that. But thanks for listening anyways.
That's how you end a show, guys. With an awkward silence.
Uh-huh. I guess cut down to no awkwardness at all.
No, because I just referenced it.
Yeah, you referenced it here on this timeline, but when we go to the other timeline, it would no longer be there.
Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.